You're listening to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guest is Gabriella Rowe, executive director of the ION. Gabby has recently transitioned to this role at the ION after serving Station Houston as CEO. Recently, Austin-based Capital Factory merged with Station to increase its presence here in Houston. Gabby and I will discuss the merger, plus how the ION and its Smart Cities Accelerator are developing to enhance technology as it pertains to daily life in Houston. Gabby, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Natalie.
So you've been busy, to say the least, transitioning from Station into your role at the ION, and most recently Station merging with Capital Factory. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that merger, why it's a merger and not an acquisition like it's been described, and really what it means to have Station now part of the Capital Factory family?
Well, I think I'll start with what it means the most, which is all good things for Houston's entrepreneurs. And I think the best way to explain it is to go back to why Station was formed in the first place. So you go back to 2016, and as I've heard, you've heard so many times, there wasn't a whole lot here in Houston, particularly for entrepreneurs. There was no place for them to go really to talk about how hard it was to be an entrepreneur, to compare term sheets, to get mentors to help them over the bumpy parts of their business. Starting a company is incredibly personal and stressful and emotional and dramatic. And so Station was started originally at Surge at the Shack to give entrepreneurs that place, that landing pad, that group of, that cohort of colleagues. And over time, as it grew, as it moved to 1301 Fan, and it continued to do that, but then because the ecosystem needed it and because JR and Grace were such great advocates for what the tech ecosystem could be, it grew way beyond that. And that, I would say, culminated in a lot of ways with Station being selected as the programming partner for the ION. Was the Sears building at that point. Nobody really knew exactly what it was going to be, and Station certainly didn't know what it was going to mean to be the programming partner for 300,000 square foot innovation hub that hadn't even been fully conceptualized yet. And so really two stations began to emerge and grow over time. And a lot of that happened just before I began as CEO, and much of it happened after I grew. I mean, after I came on as CEO, as it continued to grow. And one part focused on what is the programming and activation going to be at the ION? How are we going to make sure that it's inclusive of all of Houston? How are we going to make sure that it drives forward talent, that it attracts funding from other parts, and in a very long-range strategic way? Well, long-range strategic doesn't work for entrepreneurs. They're in the moment. They need capital now. They need to fix their business now. They need customers now. And that kind of attention is exactly what the Capital Factory deal is all about. It's about making sure that Station goes back to its roots, focusing on the entrepreneur, and that Capital Factory, who's one of the best organizations out there to serve the needs of entrepreneurs, is now there front and center to serve their needs. Here in the city of Houston, they don't have to go to Austin. They don't have to travel to Dallas. It's right here in their backyard, and really is the best of all possible worlds for them.
Yeah. It's also, you know, representing a kind of different approach for Capital Factory, who has space in Dallas that they kind of run, and they've now have a full team there. And in Houston, they've kind of been more strategic with creating these partnerships versus just going all in on a real estate move. So for that reason, you know, what's Capital Factory? What are you seeing their plans for hiring and, you know, growing the team here in Houston?
Well, I think they've learned and grown as an organization themselves as a startup, and those lessons have contributed to, I think, the really thoughtful path that they're putting into growing in Houston. Houston represents a huge opportunity for the state of Texas. You know, we've said this all along, as we focus on growing an innovation economy here, how do we leverage all this incredible industrial power we have in Houston? And that's something that Capital Factory's companies will really be able to take advantage of. But what they've learned is that this is a really personal business, the entrepreneur business. It's really emotional. You get very, very close to the people that you grow your company with and the place where you grow your company. And so handling those relationships, building on those relationships through partnership as opposed to takeover, for want of another word, is a much more productive end. And I think that's exemplified by the reactions that Houstonians and entrepreneurs have had to the Capital Factory deal. Mm-hmm. Every person that spoke to me after the announcement was, this is amazing for Houston's entrepreneurs. What a great build on what Station already was. And that's really what it was intended to be. And it's exactly what Houston needs. It's exactly what our entrepreneurs need.
Yeah. I like, you know, kind of went one way to phrase is it's Station kind of going back to its roots and focusing on its startups, what they need, and what the mentors can provide. So for you, what does it mean for those startup members and for the mentors who are now kind of part of this greater Capital Factory family?
I think it means being able to take advantage of many of the things that Capital Factory does, I would say better than anybody else in many parts of the country, certainly better than anybody else in the state of Texas, and that is pulling together groups of investors, pulling together groups of mentors from across the state that can really contribute to getting a company ready to raise capital and grow. They are exceptional at highlighting opportunities for venture capital. They are investors themselves, mm-hmm. so they get it. They understand how to get companies ready for that process. And they are shining a spotlight on Houston, on our talent, on our startups that they didn't have before in the national foundation platform of venture capital investment.
So I want to shift to talking about the ION and what your mission there is. And I think one of the key things that I've noticed is, you know, we're taking a lot of notes from other innovation ecosystems from around the world, really. And it's a bit of a painfully slow process, I know, for you to kind of just have to wait for Houston's innovation ecosystem to develop. But there are also some benefits from being like kind of a later stage innovation ecosystem. And so how are you taking into account kind of some of these lessons learned from other cities that have kind of gone through this already?
Well, I think those lessons are twofold, and they really do accrete to a much more powerful tech innovation economy in the end here for Houston. The first is lots of time for self-reflection. So lots of time for us to think about not just what we're not good at and what we haven't done, but also what we have done well and what we are good at. Because one of the reasons why we're so late to this this innovation economy game, so to speak, is because our economy has done really well. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of success stories. We have more Fortune 500 companies than any other city other than New York. So what is it that has contributed to that? We've also been an incredibly innovative city. We have cured cancer in different ways. We've mastered the artificial heart transplant. We put man on the moon. We dug the longest ship channel in North America. These really big, crazy, innovative projects. And yet we still weren't able to do that from an innovation economy. And so that self-reflective piece was really important. The other one, which is one that I spend a lot of time thinking about, is what's the end result? What is the goal that you're shooting for? And where have the other tech ecosystems ended up that maybe we don't want to be? Maybe their success has created some byproducts that maybe we would like to avoid here in Houston. And I think inclusion, developing a really diverse tech economy is probably one of the most significant. I'm a female entrepreneur, so this is very personal and front and center for me. But if you look around at the most successful tech ecosystems in this country, most people can name them. It's going to be Silicon Valley. It's going to be New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. They are predominantly white and male, and not just by a little bit, by a lot. We are the most diverse city in the United States. There is no one group that holds a majority in this city. How can we build on that to create the first major tech economy in the United States that is truly diverse and inclusive? So right now, less than 2% of venture capital funding goes to female-founded businesses. Less than 2%. It's a tiny number. And if you then slice below that to minority-owned businesses, and then, of course, the smallest of all, which is female founders of color, mm-hmm. that you get into these teeny tiny little decimal points of funding. And that's what's being compounded in these other ecosystems. We have an opportunity to do things very differently because we are going slowly, because we are using this thoughtful approach to building our ecosystem. And quite frankly, because we have such great DNA off of which to build it. Mm-hmm. We're a problem-focused city. We like to fix things. We like to take on really hard challenges. And when I'm talking to people about this, I often use the Hidden Figures example. And I'll preface this by saying that I am a former New Yorker, so the reference I'm about to make to New York is from personal experience. Don't want any New Yorkers to take offense. But in Hidden Figures, you have three women of color who are mathematicians and physicists who played a material role in enabling space flight to take place. They were given a seat at the table, albeit begrudgingly, without equity, without credit. They were not treated in any way in an inclusive manner, but they were given a seat at the table. If it were the same situation in New York, the equity, all of that other stuff in that day and age would not have taken place either, but they wouldn't even have made it to the table. They wouldn't have made it through the door to the gate, because who was allowed in and who was not was more important than solving the problem. In Houston, solving the problem is always the most important. So we have a long way to go before we make that inclusivity a reality, but we've got some great DNA off of which to build it.
I want to go back to gentrification in a second and kind of the inclusivity that you're working on with the ION. But it's interesting you brought up kind of these innovations that Houston's been known for historically. Mm-hmm. And if you look at some of those things, they've happened in silos, you know what I mean? So they happened within the Texas Medical Center or within Johnson Space Center. So, you know, for you, how important is the ION and maybe Houston's innovation ecosystem as a whole to kind of connect the dots in this way for future innovation?
Well, I think that's the single most important part about the physical part of the ION. It's breaking down those intellectual property walls. And we love our intellectual property here in Houston. And the more precious it is, the bigger the wall, the bigger the compound, the more levels of security you have to go through to get in. And we've gotten really good at that. But to your point, that means that there's no cross-pollination. There are no collisions. No one is learning from one another. And the problems in the world that we have to solve for have now gotten so big and so hairy and meaty mm-hmm. that one industry alone can't solve them. They have global reach and they're very interdisciplinary. And so we need a physical place that forces industry, academia, the medical practice, the logistics practice, aerospace, all of those to come together in one place, share ideas, mm-hmm. jointly problem solve, or we're never going to make it over that that hurdle. That is part of Houston that runs against us that mm-hmm. the ION is designed to fight.
Because there's so many technologies that maybe were invented for space purposes that have applications in healthcare or something like that. You know, I can think
Absolutely.
Of countless examples right
Absolutely.
Now.
But data is the biggest mm-hmm. example. As we develop really strong expertise in artificial intelligence and machine learning here in Houston, we also have two of the greatest commodities in the development of algorithmic solutions, and that's pools of data, huge, long, deep pools of data. One of those pools is in the oil and gas industry, and one of those pools is in the healthcare industry. Both of those industries, for different reasons, are highly protective of their data. The reason why so much exists is because they were afraid to even throw it out, lest somebody get a hold of it. So it's how do we work with those both industries so that they can get to a place where they feel comfortable sharing that data? Because mm-hmm. the broader it is, the more mixed it is between companies, between geographies, the better the algorithms are, the less biased they are to the original content, and the more effective they are in developing solutions. So part of the ION's role is helping industry de-risk the innovation process. Mm-hmm. And some of that is psychological de-risking, but some of it is actually real de-risking. How do we act as Switzerland, pooling together data that no longer carries the identification of a particular company so that their IP can't be stolen, but it can still be pooled together in a way to come up with joint solutions that everyone benefits from. Mm-hmm. We have the ability as that kind of a hub, that kind of a center of mm-hmm. gravity to begin to create those opportunities for Houston's companies.
So I want to pivot back to diversity inclusion. The community around the ION does have concerns with what is happening with the development of the ION. So how are you addressing those concerns?
When I think about those concerns and the broader concerns of what happens to Houston's talent, I have to take it on a Houston-wide mm-hmm. basis because, as I said earlier, this is a project about the innovation economy in Houston. What we've seen in other innovation economies across the country is that the more successful companies are, the more startups grow, the more industry innovates, the more companies like Google and Microsoft come in, the more housing costs go up, the more rents go up, the more taxes go up, which makes it harder and harder for people whose wages stay the same to stay in the neighborhoods that they grew up in. Mm-hmm. They can't earn more money in order to keep up with those rising costs, and therefore they have to move further and further away. And you know, the question then to me becomes around how do you make sure that everyone who lives within a city where this innovation is taking place also is given the opportunity to get their piece of the pie? Mm-hmm. And are we creating an opportunity for Houston, the city, or are we creating an opportunity for Houstonians? And in my mind, we're creating an opportunity for Houstonians because the concerns of the neighborhood surrounding any development in Houston as part of this innovation economy are going to be exactly the same. Am I going to be able to get one of these tech jobs that are going to pay more money? Am I going to be able to participate in this innovation economy and stay where I am? And so the way we think about that in programming the ION is that continuum of talent. And if you look at innovation economies, the jobs break up into three categories. There are the jobs for which you need a certification. And that means you don't even have to graduate from high school. You can get a certification in metalworking, advanced manufacturing, CAD drawing, something, a certain technical application that is an essential part of driving forward the economy. There are many of those jobs are going to be available, increasing every year. Those jobs pay an average of $25 to $28 an hour. That's significantly higher than the minimum mm-hmm. wage. And so we want to focus on making sure that we are not just putting the programs in for that tranche of programming, that tranche of jobs, but also we are putting them actively in jobs. The second group of jobs that you can train for or that are part of an innovation economy are your 2 years associate's degrees. We happen to have some of the best two-year institutions in the country. We have in the oil and gas industry an industry that has taken advantage of those 2 years associate's degrees for years. So how do we retool what might have been field services jobs to be jobs that that have the skills for the innovation economy? A perfect example is San Jacinto's Energy Institute down in Pasadena. 35 labs that focus on the technical aspects of what decarbonization and energy transition could look like in years to come in Houston. 98% of their students go on to work immediately. How do we take a remote location in Pasadena, though, and use the platform of the ION to help that training be available to all Houstonians, some of whom will be in direct proximity to the ION, some of whom will be in other parts of Houston, whether that's near Northside or Cashmere Gardens or Sunnyside, other communities that we want to be able to take advantage of this innovation economy. And then, of course, there's the last set of jobs, which are your four-year plus jobs. And we have amazing institutions in Houston. And in fact, within a four-mile radius of the ION, there are currently 20,000 students studying computer science or STEM. We want to make sure that those 20,000 students stay in Houston and work in Houston because many of them are Houstonians. We have done a great job of exporting them to both coasts mm-hmm. before now. We want to make sure that we use the ION as a platform to keep them here, to actually show them the opportunities that will be here for them in the city.
So I understand that the ION is kind of partnering with organizations. They have several educational partners that will be in the ION. And so these programs are focused on those retooling and kind of making these students able to enter different tech-related jobs. But what about your observations? I know you have this education background. What some observations you have about Houston education before those points? You know, the high school, the middle school, even elementary school, creating opportunities for technology education at those levels.
Well, we're not doing a great job. That'd be my headline.
Yeah.
And that's really the basis on which we're developing a lot of our programming, is knowing that whatever fix has to come for HISD, it's going to be a lot longer in the making. And there's going to be a whole generation of students that are in middle school and high school today that whatever change comes, they won't be able to reap the benefits of it. And so that means partnering with people who are actively working in those school systems who get it, who get the need. And some of those people are on the city level, like Juliet Stepesh, and we're working with her on how can we amplify the Higher Houston Youth Program to focus specifically on tech. Or their individual principals in some of the most challenged schools who are under-resourced and they want to do the right thing by their students, but they don't know how to do it. So it's developing programs with them or with individual teachers who say, I've got these five students who I know could do this, and can I bring them to your Maker Lab and give them some experience? So right now we have about 120 students going through a program called Innovation Challenge. It's with five high schools in deeply challenged, underserved HISD schools around the urban core of Houston. And those students are coming to us over a number of months, taking days of classes in advanced manufacturing and metalworking, leadership. We're doing soft skills and hard skills. They're learning about immersive reality. They're learning coding. Also that they can have a skill set that they can take on to that next opportunity, but also so that we can convince them that this is their opportunity. Because some of the challenge we're facing with the schools in our immediate vicinity here in Houston is there are no educators there who can see what's coming next, because they just haven't been given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Students are going home and saying to parents, I want to work in tech. And parents or grandma or uncle or aunt is responding, no, that's not a job for you. There's an auto mechanic job down the street you can take right away. You need to go do that. And trapping them in that way. So we have to educate all of those different constituents and make sure that they have the resources they need to encourage students to move in the right direction. And when we talk about that upskills, it's not just the students in school. Because imagine the impact on a family. If your high school student gets a $28 an hour job, your 26-year-old who dropped out of school and is barely working minimum wage goes and gets a certification and is able to earn something in the mid-20s or the 30s. And dad, who is an electrician, is now able to retool that so that he can work in a data-centric tech environment and is earning significantly more, where he can move up to a manager level because he's got so much domain expertise from years of working in the field. And suddenly you have a family that is prospering in the neighborhood in which they all grew up, in the home in which they all lived and grew, and will be able to do so for a long time and generations to come. That's the cycle that we want to affect in growing Houston's version of an innovation economy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking when you were talking, it's almost like you need to be educated on your educational opportunities, and starting from like day one of kindergarten almost, like to realize, because I think that there's this trend, and we're in a time of such rapidly evolving and developing technology where, you know, students today, you know, maybe they're asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And whatever they say, that job might not even exist when they grow up. So training for skills rather than jobs specifically is very much something that needs to be done, I think, from such a young age.
It is. And we're not yet in a position where we're going to be able to solve for that within our school system, because there's a lot of other things we've got to solve for first. And so it's about how can we layer on top of that to support the educators, to support the administrators, but more than anything to support the families, because they're the ones who are having to make the here and now decisions about, is my child going to be able to continue in school, or do they have to drop out and go to work? Mm-hmm. Is there a way in which I can change my resume or add a few skills so that I can move from a very mediocre paying job to a really much more elevated paying job? And it's not that the IONS focus is to provide wraparound services for communities, but what we can do is provide wraparound information and wraparound support for the many, many people in Houston who are doing a lot of these things well, particularly as it applies to tech, because we believe that this is the future economic opportunity for this city. And fortunately, there are lots of other powerful people who believe that too and are helping us along the way.
It is definitely, you know, apparent how closely the ION and the city are working together along with Rice Management Company. So kind of all three getting together to kind of create this, you know, vision. But so I want to talk about partnering with the city, specific to the ION Smart Cities Accelerator, because, you know, you're now accepting applications for the second cohort. Yep. So I want to talk to you about that and also how the first cohort is going. They're in their pilot stage now. So they're out in the city connecting with actual citizens with their technology.
Absolutely. When we first started thinking about the kinds of resources that we wanted to have at the ION, being able to accelerate companies in certain areas was incredibly important. We knew that was something we wanted to do. And the first thing we did was look around the world and see who were the great accelerators and who did we want to recruit to Houston. But then we also started to discover holes. And where there were holes, where we couldn't find a good program that was right for Houston, we decided to launch those programs ourselves. And the first of those programs was the Smart Cities Accelerator. And what we found when we went around the country was that all of the Smart Cities Accelerators focused on the technology. It was about the sexy tech. It was about who had the coolest toy. Mm-hmm. And we wanted something that was really grounded in the people. We wanted something that was grounded in our city, that was going to make life better for our city, especially post-Hurricane Harvey and all the conversations about resiliency and how technology could potentially help us in those circumstances. And so we went to the city and said, we would like the prize, the end goal of our accelerator, to be launching technology for the city of Houston, for the citizens of the city of Houston. And we want to start that by talking to the citizens themselves. And fortunately, we have what I would call a fairly forward-looking administration who agreed that that was the approach that they wanted to take to smart cities technology. They wanted to solve real problems, not just have cool toys. And so we began the process of speaking to members of the complete communities. We began with Near Northside and asked them what they cared about most, not what they cared about most in terms of technology, but what were the problems that were really getting in their way. Mobility was incredibly important. Safety of their children, safety crossing streets, safety during weather events, communication, access to resources. Those all came up as really important issues for them. So when we put out our call for startups for the first cohort, those were the problems we asked people to solve. Mm-hmm. For the second cohort, what we did is ask the city what is going to be most important in the resiliency plan that's being launched this week. And they said clean air and clean water, and making sure that we have both monitoring and implementation around those issues. And so that's the call that we put out for the second cohort. The result for the first cohort, which had 10 companies in it, was those 10 companies are now launching 15 pilots with the city of Houston. That's 15 pilots to actually put technology in the streets of our city, affecting the daily lives of our citizens for good. Mm-hmm. If you can do that in 3 months, you know, we'll just keep doing this over and over again, and we'll have no problem becoming the smartest city in the United States. And there are things like smart concrete. So one of our startups is installing smart concrete in the roadways that are going down for part of the memorial renovation that's taking place. And what that does is it tells them how fast the concrete is curing on an app on your telephone. Mm-hmm. How fast is the concrete curing? Is the curing consistent throughout the concrete? Are there any flaws in the density throughout the concrete? And what that means is that when that road opens, we'll know it's safe. So mm-hmm. if you'll remember, probably about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, the bridge in Florida that collapsed days after it opened, mm-hmm. that's exactly the circumstance that we won't have to deal with when we deal with concrete this way. And then you also can monitor the degradation over time. And you can tell when there is a fault or a flaw in the way that that concrete is aging. The way that that's historically been done is throughout the course of the project, they take the concrete that's being laid and they put it in a cylinder. Mm-hmm. They take that cylinder back to the lab. They run it through some assessments and some statistical analyses. And then they guess at what they think will happen to that concrete over time in that particular location. Well, they can't really predict how much it's going to rain. They can't really predict what the air temperatures are going to be or the levels of it. That technology will make a significant difference. And I use that example because it's not that sexy. It's not that cool, yeah. But makes a huge difference in the safety of Houston citizens.
Yeah. And you're talking about Sensatech, which
I am.
Came right out of the University of Houston. So,
yes, it did.
And I agree. It's not something you would ever think about, but how effective and impactful that technology will have, especially in a city like Houston. We get a lot of rain.
Yes, we do.
We have a lot of cars.
And a lot of humidity and a lot of people driving where they're not supposed to. Yeah, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. But I love this. So tell me a little bit more about some other companies that are kind of going through the program that are really solving some of these problems, because I know some people might not be familiar yep. with kind of the type of startups.
Another company called Autonomy that is developing a bird's eye approach to autonomous vehicles. So rather than the vehicle itself being autonomous, traffic is autonomous. Mm-hmm. And that means that there are cameras mounted all over a streetscape. And so that if you have the functionality, basically you're just popping a module mm-hmm. into the electrical port of your car, and your car can automatically be controlled by this remote control system. Works incredibly well for commuting routes. It works mm-hmm. incredibly well for bus travel, for anything that is going to happen in a regular and consistent way. The superiority to traditional, and I always feel a little strange saying traditional autonomous vehicles, but we've come so far.
Yeah.
But the big difference with traditional autonomous technology is that it can immediately deal with the things that are most challenging for an autonomous vehicle, which is the cat jumping out from behind a sign that it's never seen before, mm-hmm. the weather event that knocks over a light that it's never seen before. Mm-hmm. The things that it can't predict, because there's only so many times you can drive down the same road for every single vehicle, it becomes cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. And it means that you can only have very, very expensive technology on a very few vehicles. It also means that those vehicles become targets because mm-hmm. they're so obviously autonomous vehicles. This gives us the opportunity for cities to retrofit cars to become autonomous for incredibly small dollar figures, mm-hmm. and create autonomous streets, which is, represents so many other possibilities along with it. Another company is called Humanity, pulls together and aggregates services within communities. Something that many of the citizens in your north side asked us for. When a hurricane comes, when a bad event takes place, how do we know where to go if we want to volunteer for something? How do we know where to go if we need something other than getting on either a static website or picking up the phone and calling a whole lot of people? It's a very difficult thing to do. And Humanity has discovered a way to solve for that problem.
So looking at kind of cohort one and what you accomplished, and then cohort two, which is, ongoing, what are some other big issues that are kind of on your mind to provide solutions to? I know that's really fascinating for people to see kind of what's on the horizon.
Well, I think when we think about other types of areas we want to accelerate, clean tech is at the top of the list. We currently are known to the world as the traditional energy capital of the world. We need to be known as the energy transition capital of the world, and hopefully eventually as the new energy capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And there's going to need to be a lot of innovation to make that happen. I can't think of a better place to do that than here in Houston. We don't yet have any accelerators focused on clean tech. I think soon we will have a few, but we need a lot more. And I think that's an area where we're going to focus more attention. And then I think there are other parts of Houston that we need to have deeper conversations about, like mobility, like access to diverse resources. Are there some innovative ways that we can accelerate acceleration? Mm-hmm. How do we make this process of innovating around your company more geographically accessible? Some of it might be building more co-working spaces, but that's not necessarily the right thing for a lot of Houstonians. Mm-hmm. So how do we bring equity to the process of innovation?
So one thing I know a lot of people like to speculate on is Houston's had some kind of ups and downs with making an ecosystem surrounded around innovation and focusing on startups. So what makes, you know, this time around different? What's changed the game, and where are we going?
Well, I have to preface this by saying that I'm always glass half full. So I'm a born optimist, mm-hmm. which is probably a good thing considering the job I'm in.
Right.
But we have a really important convergence taking place in the city of Houston now that I would date back to Hurricane Harvey and, dare I say, perhaps more importantly, losing the Amazon bid. Mm-hmm. It was a wake-up call in a really meaningful way across multiple industries, across different power factions, old guard, new guard, medical, energy, academia, Houstonians. Mm-hmm. We had some seriously bruised egos. Okay. And more importantly, we also started to get fearful about our futures, our economic futures as a city. And it has been a unifying fear that has caused us to go very, very fast in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. If you and I had this conversation 2 years ago and told me this is where we'd be today, I would have had a hard time believing it, and I can come up with some pretty big fantasies. Mm-hmm. And so if I extrapolate that same pace forward in 2 years, we will be worthy of being what by then I hope will be the third largest city in the United States. We will be worthy of the venture capital that will be showing up here. And the big benchmark for me that I use over and over again is the state of Texas currently generates about $4 billion of VC funding. California generates $77 billion and New York generates $44 billion. From our industrial base, we have potential to at least meet New York, if not seriously compete with California. I believe that's where we will be. We will be well on the way 2 years from now. We will be getting there 5 to 7 years from now because we have all the raw material, and finally, everyone is pushing in the same direction.
Yeah, I think it is very interesting to compare where Houston was at the time of the Amazon bid to where it is now. And I also feel like the bruised egos that you mentioned with losing the Amazon bid, it's because I think Houston and Houstonians are very, very proud of what we have. And I also think we're a little bit misunderstood. Maybe that's just me projecting as a Houstonian.
I think we are misunderstood, yeah. But we're going to make sure everybody gets straight on that.
Great. Good work. Let's all do it together. All right. Thank you, Gabby, so much for chatting with me.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and stay up to date on all things Houston innovation at innovationmap.com.